Thank you, Reverend Grumman, for inviting me, and thank you, everybody, for coming. So we're going to start off today with a whole bunch of questions, and then hopefully we'll find a few themes that can tie them all together. So it'll take us a few minutes to get to our main question, which is perhaps surprising to some of us, which is the holiest day of the year, Purim or Yom Kippur. At first glance, most people assume that Yom Kippur is in fact the holiest day of the year, so we'll have to see why that may or may not be the case. I want to start one step back. You know, most of us probably in our lifetime, as we experience the Torah, and specifically as the weeks go by and we learn through the Parshiot, there are certain questions, certain philosophical questions that we might come across. And one that always bothered me, until thankfully I finally found an answer, which will get woven in here hopefully, was we know after the Jews leave Mitzrayim, after the splitting of the Yam Suf, the Jews get the Torah sometime later, and then somehow a couple of days later, 40 days later, we end up with the Chet HaEgel. However we understand exactly what that Chet was, what the Jews did to serve, to create this golden calf, it baffles the mind. How could it possibly have happened? I'd like to think that I'm a pretty decent Jew, and had I lived there experiencing all of those miracles, I'd like to think that I wouldn't have taken part in that. So it always bothered me, how could it be, after experiencing such amazing miracles, seeing the hand of God, literally, yet so soon later they came up to such a terrible avera, such a terrible sin. So that's my overarching question, which always bothered me. And we'll put that in the background, because I think as we get to it, it'll help us understand a number of things. Let's take a moment now and take a look at the sources that I provided. We're going to read through a few sources and then try to understand them. So the very first source comes from the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni, which says, Kol HaMoadim, all of the Jewish holidays, Asidin Lihibata, will eventually, in the times of the Mashiach and beyond, Lihibata will become nullified, will become no longer necessary. But the only one that will remain is Purim. Now, just as a bit of a source that might come as a surprise, right? It is the only one. There may be some other opinions in that Medrash, but the prevailing opinion is that the only holiday that we currently practice that will continue, so to speak, forever is the holiday of Purim. It is based on the Pasuk from the Megillah, which is source 2, which says, V'yemei ha-Purim ha'ila, these days of Purim, lo ya'avru mitoch ha-Yehudim, they will not pass by the Jews, v'zichrom lo yosef mizarim, they will never be forgotten from the descendants of the Jews. So the source, the Medrash quotes as a proof to this idea, is based on this pasuk, that Purim will never be forgotten. It will always be practiced, even in the times of Mashiach, when we're all brought back to Eretz Yisrael, and the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. Nevertheless, Purim will remain. Nothing else will remain. So that obviously suggests, so again we need to understand why, that there is something special about Purim that perhaps is more special than any other holiday as well. Now directly, there's a famous word from the Arizal in Source 3. I just give you the first piece of it. It's really just a play on the word, where he talks about this idea that Purim being a higher level holiday, just by the words of comparing, Yom Kippur is Kippur, Kippurim, or Yom HaKippurim is Kippurim, right? That Yom Kippur is like Purim, which sounds like, again, that Purim is the higher level. Yom Kippur is kind of like Purim. So again, how we understand when we all know that Yom Kippur is the day of Slicha V'Kapara, it's the day when all of our Averot are totally, absolved and forgotten in Hashem's eyes. Purim, we give a few shalach manos, we give some money, we sit around and have some fun at a seuda, we go to listen to the Megillah. It's not usually considered or thought upon to be the day that is the most holy. So we'll have to uncover that. Before we can do that, we're going to take one more step back. And we'll see eventually how this will tie in to really what Purim is all about. If you take a look in Source 4, the next couple of sources we're going to look at take us back to the stories in Sefer Shemot of the giving of the Torah, of the Jews at Har Sinai accepting the Torah. And the first, if you will, acceptance of the Torah is recorded in source 4. A famous idea at the end, which we all hopefully are aware of, Vayikach Sefer HaBrit, Vayikra Baznei Ha'am, and he called in the ears of the nation, Vayomru, and all of the Jews said, Kol Asher Diber Hashem, everything that God has told us, Na'ase V'Nishma. Right, the famous two words of Na'ase V'Nishma, which is something that was the reason God gave the Jews the Torah and not anybody else, because all the other nations of the world wanted to hear what it was about. God said, I'll give this to the nation the Torah, and they started asking questions. Well, what's in the Torah? Maybe it's good for us, maybe it's not. Right? The Jewish people were the only people that said, Na'aseh, first we will do it, then V'Nishma, then we will learn, then we'll try to listen to understand it. Meaning, no one is trying to suggest that we shouldn't learn, right? We're all sitting here learning. That's the best proof that a Jew is supposed to learn. But never is our acceptance of the Torah and of the mitzvot supposed to be dependent on our understanding. Meaning, what the Jews said to Hashem at Har Sinai was, we're going to keep the mitzvot. Then we'll spend the rest of our life trying to understand them. Right? But it's not that well, if I understand it, then I'll do. No, the main idea of why God gave us the Torah was our willingness to accept it blindly and then to go ahead and learn. And that, again, is an amazing, amazing statement that a person's going to say. Really shows the belief that they had in Hashem at that moment in time, which, by the way, just furthers my first question of how they then went back on it. But we'll come back to that. So the idea being that was Na'ase V'Nishma. Beautiful. They accepted the Torah. If we go to Pasuk in Source 5, the Torah says, Vayotze Moshe es ha'am lekrat Elokim, and Moshe went out to the people, min ha'machane, from the camp, the famous words, Vayitzyatvu b'tachti tahar, and they gathered at the foot of the nation. And Rashi quotes the famous Gemara, it's a Medrash too, little different versions, but if you jump for a moment, please, to Source 8, the Gemara there in Maseches Shabbos, quotes, and this is again what Rashi on that pasuk will link you to. Vayitzyatzvu b'tachtir ha'har. What does that mean? Amar Rav Avdimi bar Chama bar Chasa. So this rabbi in the Gemara said, famous words. Melamid shekafa al kadosh baruch hu aleim et ha'har kigigi. That Hashem, so to speak, lifted up the mountain Har Sinai over the heads of the Jews like this big, you know, casket, this big box, this huge box, obviously a mountain, and said, Va'amar Lahem, and he said to the Jews, Imatem mekablam ha-Torah, if you accept and keep the Torah properly, mutav, then it'll be good for you. Vim lav, but if you don't, sham tehei kivur aschem, this is where your burial place will be, so to speak, as if he was saying he would drop the mountain on top of them. So on the one hand, there's a bunch of questions to start with, right? We already accepted the Torah, so this seems like it's a second version of Kabbalah Torah, of acceptance of the Torah. So at first, we can ask, why do we need two times? Right? We already accepted the Torah, already said Na'aseh V'Nishma. And furthermore, I think we all know that one of the basic fundamental beliefs of every Jew is the ability to have free will, right? To be able to choose to do good or to do bad, to follow the Torah or not. And yet it sounds like at the very beginning of this process of getting the Torah, it sounds like we didn't have much of a choice, right? Who in their right mind would have said no? Right? Here we have Hashem basically threatening our lives if we don't accept the Torah. So how are we to understand that the whole beginning part of our Yiddishkeit, so to speak, was based on being forced? That's another question. And then finally, connecting here to Purim, if you go back to Source 7 and the Gemara in 8, I just skipped it because it's the same words, but at the end of Source 8 refers to the Pasuk in Source 7. Another Pasuk from towards the end of our Megillah, Megillas Esther, the Megillah says, Kimu v'kiblu, at the end of the whole story of Purim, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, the Jews re-accepted the Torah, Aleyam v'al zarim v'al kol nivim, right? They re-accepted the Torah for all generations, right? And go back to the bottom of page of Source 8, that last little paragraph. Amar Rava, Afal Pikein, meaning even though we just read that this story of Kafal Leim Har Kegigit, right, that there was this acceptance of the Torah with the mountain forest up on top of us, Hadar V'kibluhu B'yamei Achashverosh, the Jews re-accepted the Torah again for a final time after the story of Purim, Dechsiv Kimu V'kiblu HaYehudim. What is Kimu V'kiblu? The double language of Kimu V'kiblu. Kimu Mashikiblu Kvar. Famous words that they re-accepted that which they had already accepted. Right, and that somehow, the end of the story of Purim, and I think this is where we're going to try to head to, because this is perhaps one of the things that is not as well known about Purim, that the end product of the entire story of Purim was that the Jews re-accepted the Torah for the final time, and that there is this element of Purim, of Torah, right? That there's a point of Purim that we are in our own way supposed to re-accept the Torah. Now again, now we can ask more questions. We had Na'aseh v'Nishma. We had this idea of Kafa, Halem, Harki, Gigit, where we were forced upon, which we still won't really understand yet. We'll get there. Why did we need it again? Why we need a third Kabbalah HaTorah? Right after Purim? Like, once wasn't one enough? Wasn't two enough? And what was so special about the third one? Weren't there other miracles that happened between a lot of time that passed between the story in the Midbar of Kafa Leim Har Kegigit and Purim? Many, many years passed. There was nothing else in our history that could have led to this Kabbalah Torah. So obviously, the Torah is teaching us, and Chazal are hinting to us, that there is something very special about Purim that will help us here. So with that in mind, let's take a step back and talk about these Kabbalah Torahs, each one. We had three. The first time, Na'aseh v'Nishma. So on the one hand, we highlighted before that there is something amazing about Na'aseh v'Nishma, right? We all know it's very difficult, right? And as time goes on, it just becomes harder. But it's very difficult to just have that blind faith and say, I'm going to do whatever it says in the Torah, right? Because I may not understand it, or maybe society is impacting on our thoughts, and maybe we therefore makes it harder for us to understand what the Torah is telling us. So therefore, on the one level, it's great. What's the downside of Na'aseh v'Nishma? The downside is, well, I accepted it myself, so I can just as easily give it up. So therefore, that Kabbalah Torah, so to speak, was not perfect. And that's why we needed the second version of Kabbalah Torah, i.e., Kafa Aleim Har Kegigit, when Hashem lifted the Torah over our head, we needed a little bit of force. Right? And Chazal tell us that that was when Moshe came down with the second Luchot. That is when Kafa Aleim Har Kegigit took place. Right? And we know from all of the sources in Chazal that Yom Kippur was that day. So there is a certain sense of Kabbalah HaTorah on Yom Kippur too. Yom Kippur is not just about Averot and getting rid of Averot. It also is our acceptance of the Torah. The only difference is, the first acceptance of the Torah was voluntary. Yom Kippur acceptance of the Torah, as we all know, the mode and the theme of Yom Kippur is very serious, perhaps yira, fear, awe, and so on. And therefore, we needed this second Kabbalah Torah. So that explains why we needed a second one. Okay, so why did we have to go further? Right, so be done with it there. What happened that we needed Purim for? So for that, I think, is where we need to understand a little bit better what it meant that we were forced. Because again, it can't be that we were literally didn't have free will, because that would fly in the face of the basic fundamental beliefs of Torah Judaism. The Maharal, over there on that part of the parasha, explains that essentially the miracles of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the miracles of Kriyat Yamsuf, the miracle now of Har Sinai, right? They were so awesome. They were so supernatural, right? It's hard for us even to believe that they happened to some degree, right? Or to envision it. They were so supernatural that anyone who was there at the time would have had no choice. Meaning you did have a choice, but it was so awesome that, you know, who wouldn't have done that, right? So it's not that we were forced, so to speak. It doesn't mean that literally this mountain would have fallen on our head and killed us, but the theme is trying to teach us that we were so in awe by this experience that it was as if we didn't have a choice, even though obviously You know, the free will was never really lifted out from under us. So with that understanding, I think we can understand a little bit, and we'll tie this back again at the end. My first question, which really always troubled me, how could we understand the Chet HaEgel? How could we understand that so soon after all of this, the Jews, or at least the men, the Jews did a horrible Chet HaEgel? So for any of you in the room who have teenage children or older, perhaps even in our day and age, even pre-adolescents will know that when it comes to parenting, and when it comes to trying to get your children to do something, and this is probably true of adults too, but I'm focused on teenagers, scaring them into doing something only will last so long. It will work if you're good at it, but it will only last so long. Meaning, if I am doing the mitzvot, or whatever it is that you want your child to do, you can only scare them into doing it for a certain period of time. It will not last forever. It is not what's going to get into the core of who they are and their belief system. Right? Again, they might be scared for a day or a week or a year of what the repercussions will be if they violate what you're asking them to do. But it is not going to become who they are so that they act that way in the future. So perhaps we could suggest that that is the same idea here too. That this experience, it was too awesome, so to speak, right? It was so awesome that we couldn't take that with us into the future, because the minute Matan Torah ended, things kind of went back to normal. We didn't see these open supernatural miracles in our regular day life. And therefore, perhaps, you know, we couldn't connect back to that, and the fear slipped away. We weren't changed for who we were inside. And therefore, it's possible that Chet could take place. Now let's extend that a little bit. If we were to compare, and again, the next piece will be, so how is Purim different? Right? So then what did Purim add to this picture? So we'll get to that in a moment. Okay? If we compare for a moment, to take a sidestep, which is a lot to talk about too, Purim and Hanukkah, the two rabbinic holidays, so we know there are many, many differences. Probably the only similarity is that they are the two bracha, two mitzvot, two holidays where we have the special bracha of Sha'asa Nisim Avosinu Bayamim Heim B'Gonazah, right? More or less. Maybe we could argue that it connects to Pesach too. That could be for a share another time. But that's about the only similarity, okay? But the difference is, we know, what was that? You can do Malacha. Oh, so, well, right, that's true. Yeah, that's true. There are other things, right? You can do Malacha, you're correct, right? It's not like the other days where you can't do Malacha. But some of the differences. On Purim, as we know, there's lots to do. There are a lot of mitzvot. There's Megillah twice. There's Matanos Levyon and the Shalach Manos. There's a Seuda. There's a lot to do. Purim, I'm sorry, Hanukkah, the menorah, that's it, right? That's the only physical mitzvah, hallel. Maybe we'll tie back to at the end, because we do say hallel on Hanukkah, not on Purim. I don't know if we'll have time to explain that, but we'll see. But those those are some of the differences. And the other difference, which is the famous difference, is we know that what was at stake. On the Hanukkah, we know that the Jewish people were only the only thing that was at stake was their religion, our religion. Had we been willing to give up our religion, the Yevanim, the Greeks, would have said, live a long life, have a nice day. They would not have bothered us, right? It was only because we weren't willing to give up our religion that the whole war started. Whereas we know on Purim, Haman had different plans, right? Similar to Hitler later on, right? He didn't care about your religion. He wanted us all gone from the earth. In fact, Haman had almost accomplished a crazy thing, which it sounds like Chazal say, that all of the Jews at the time lived in that location, different from other times, and in fact his goal was to actually wipe out the Jews all in one day, right? And he, as Chazal explained to us, it almost happened, had things not developed the way they did. So it wasn't like he was just like some meshuggah with a plan that could have never come to play. What's one, just as a side again, halachic ramification of this, so we know because Purim is a physical annihilation, so that's why we have these physical mitzvahs. We have to eat a su'uda, we have to, you know, have bread at a meal, whereas on Hanukkah we don't have that obligation, even though Jews are very good at eating, so we eat anyway, right? There's no obligation to have a meal on Hanukkah. Whereas in Purim, that is one of the big mitzvot of the day. But again, I don't know about you. I would have thought that Hanukkah, our spiritual annihilation, would be just as important, right? There's no simcha, so to speak, the formal requirement of simcha to counteract that on Hanukkah. There is on Purim. So on a basic level, this is where we're going to start. And there's a lot to discuss on this. We know that on Purim, how did Esther solve this? How did we eventually win? Right? The Megillah says, Lech kenos es kol ha-Yehudim. She said, gather everyone together. Bring everyone together. We need to be one. Right? Because Haman was not a dumb person. Right? He knows, as the Megillah said, that we were an Am Mefuzar Umefurad. We were a divided nation. We didn't get along with each other quite very well. And that was his way of understanding that he could get to us. So Esther's solution could only happen by bringing us together. That perhaps is why we have the mitzvah of providing for the poor, specifically on this day. That's why we give Mishloach Manot, to engender, you know, love amongst each other, amongst friends and family and so on. Which again, obviously doesn't happen on Hanukkah. Hanukkah, it was a small minority of the Jewish people that saved the day. Right? The Chashmonaim took care of everything for us. Right? Because it was a different issue. So I think on a very starting level, the idea of Purim was this ability to bring people together in such a way that could even uproot the decrees of Hashem. And that is something that we don't find elsewhere in Torah. The idea that the solution to uprooting God's perhaps evil decrees that could have happened based on Haman's attempt was totally taken care of, wiped out, only by all of us coming together. So in a certain basic sense, we'll start with that, that's where Purim begins to be different than the other holidays. Now, before we go further, I think what's important is that we understand that there are a couple of other questions. When we start, because that doesn't really explain Yom Kippur, right? Why is Purim better, higher, whatever we'll call it, higher spiritual level than Kippur? Interesting point, and I don't know, I know my grandmother, Kanaina Harris, she's 95 years old, and these are the kinds of things that she just grew up knowing. Like, she could tell you, you know, in this year, what day Purim could fall out, or what day Pesach could or can't fall out. So there's a very interesting thing, which this one is not as well known, that if you look at the days of the week that Purim versus Yom Kippur can fall out, it's fascinating. The way it works out is that Yom Kippur can only fall out on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Shabbos. Go check the calendar if you want to test it. Okay? Only fall out on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Shabbos. Purim can only fall out on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Okay, so the only overlapping day is Thursday. Okay, we'll see if we have time to explain why this is.
Sunday, Tuesday,
Thursday, and Friday. Okay, the only days that Purim can fall out on. So what we're seeing, and we'll try to explain that, is that they alternate, right? Meaning Thursday is the only overlapping day that they can both fall on. We'll try to see if we have time to come back to that. And the other question that I want to try to explain, which connects, right? Perhaps some of you have heard this question already over the last few days because we just read Parashat Zachor. This is a very similar question to the question I asked about the Chet HaEgel. We know when it comes to the war with Amalek, when the Jews get blindsided by Amalek, they say the word, the famous, hard-to-understand words, Hayesh Hashem bekerbenu emayim, right? Is Hashem really here? Are you kidding? Is he here? He just took us through all of Yetzia Mitzrayim. He took us through Kriyat Yamsuf, and now the Jews are saying, like, clearly there's something more to what they were saying. And with that, let's go back to Purim as a story. Now, this is something we'll try to develop in just a brief way. We know that if we talk about Purim, one of the famous ideas is the idea that the story of Purim is based on a nes nistar, right? A hidden miracle, right? So Hashem's name is not found in the Megillah. There's lots of references to this. But in practice, in theory, what this really means is that if you go through the entire story of the Megillah, there is no supernatural nes that takes place, unlike most of the rest of our history of miracles. There is nothing supernatural, right? A bad guy gets up, finds a way to convince the king that he should be able to kill a people, which Ahasuerus could have cared less about the Jewish people, right? It wasn't so hard for him to convince him of that. Convince him he should kill him. Just so happens, right, that his queen dies, right, before he has her killed. Esther comes along. This whole story, right, it's a story, right? It's a good novel, right? It just so happens that each of these details happen, right? The concept of it just so happens, right? Seemingly a coincidence, right? That is the concept of a nes nistar, that Hashem basically pulled the strings of what we'll call nature, right? Nothing crazy or supernatural, to make the outcome to be saving the Jewish people, right? So I think to take that helps us explain where we were talking about before, that when the Jews went through these miracles of Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, how could they say, Hayesh Hashem Bekir Beinu Amayin? Is Hashem really here? At that moment in time, the Jews didn't really understand Hashem. They didn't understand the relationship with Hashem and how it would work. They thought he did these crazy miracles, then he may have drifted into the sunset, right? Wasn't involved in our day-to-day actions, right? He comes around every couple thousand years to, you know, snap his fingers and do a crazy miracle, and then he goes back to wherever he goes, and it's over, and we're back all on our own. And it's not crazy to think that that's what the Jews at the time thought. And that is what is so powerful about Purim, that the story of Purim was the first time that the entire Jewish people were in danger of being literally wiped out in one day, and that our being saved was totally natural events. Nothing supernatural, nothing crazy or undeniable. It just, Hashem, you know, we often teach little kids, right? It's like a puppet master, but he pulled the strings, and it worked out that we were saved. So with that in mind, I think we can understand that the concept of comparing Yom Kippur to Purim is as follows. Yom Kippur represents Yira, fear. Kaf aleihem har kegigi, right, of the mountain being forced upon our head. Purim represents the nes nistar, which is more of a Kabbalah Torah me'ahava Hashem, from love from Hashem, because we finally learned the lesson. We finally learned what Hashem wanted us to know, and that is He is with us every single day, every moment of our day, whether it looks like things are happening are good or bad or wonderful, terrible, miserable, right? Regardless of what it is, what the outcome is, we see that Hashem is with us every moment of our day, every day of the year, every day of our lives, and that is what Purim has above all else, in that it is supposed to connect our basic emuna in Hashem, that Hashem is with us, and that is why after the story of the Purim, the Jews finally understood what the Torah was all about. That it's not just my believing in Hashem. Now I really believe in every word that Hashem gave us, i.e. the Torah. And that's why at the end of the story of Purim, that is why we reaccepted the Torah, and that acceptance of the Torah existed forever. We don't find another acceptance of the Torah. And that is what makes Purim a higher level than Yom Kippur. When we say it's a higher level than Yom Kippur, that doesn't put down Yom Kippur at all, right? Right? They have a different sphere, right? And we're going to explain that right now as we conclude, right? Yom Kippur is really holy, don't get me wrong, right? But the notion of being forced, and not forced, but to be scared into things, as we're recognizing, is not the way to help us continue it in the future. The same way. Let's try to conclude by explaining the idea of the days of the week that each of them can fall out. So how do we understand why Purim falls out on certain days, you know, Kippur falls on opposite days except for that one Thursday that overlaps? So I think with what we're talking about, we can understand that the basic service, the avoda of the day of Yom Kippur, is to throw out the bad. Right? Very interesting sefer by the name of Shvili Pinchas, he gives the mashal where if you are cold, you know, for people who are, I don't know what the right terminology, right, you are gold miners. So when you go to mine the gold, you take the big chunks of gold, you separate them, right? But you're getting rid of all the bad stuff first, right? That's Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is getting rid of the bad. But we all know if you were doing that, there might be little pieces of gold that are still stuck to the big chunks of coal, or of bad stuff, right? So Purim represents the ability to later on, after you do the first step, right, of removing the bad, now you can go back to find some of that bad and see was there any good left there, right? So the idea of Purim is us specifically doing physical things. We do eat, we do drink, but we do it in the right way, so to speak. We do it with our spiritual connection to Hashem in mind. And with that, if we take a look at the days of creation, so if we look what was created very quickly on the first day of creation, we know Shemayim Va'aretz. So we know that when it comes to earth, if it was made into a kli, into a vessel, can become tamei. It's one of those objects that can become tamei. On the second day of creation, there was nothing that was created that could become tamei. On the third day, the trees were created, kli eitz, trees can become tamei. On the fourth day, the stars, nothing that can become tamei can become impure. On the fifth day, the complicated one, we'll just skip over it quickly, we'll mention it quickly, the birds and fish. So birds and fish on a Torah level cannot become tamei, but there are some rabbinic applications where they can become. And obviously on day six, people, animals, all things that can become tamei. So if we take that and we look at it, basically, it turns out that on the first, the third, and the sixth day, there is nothing that can become tummy. Those are the days that things can become tummy, but on the days of the second, the fourth, and the others, there is no tumma. So Yom Kippur can only fall out on days when there was no things that were created in creation that can become tamei, because it's so to speak, on Yom Kippur, we can't become tamei, we can't impurify ourselves, we want to stay away from tuma. So therefore, the days of the week, dafka specifically, have to be those days of creation where there was nothing that can become tamei, whereas Purim were on days that could become tamei, because again, the idea of Purim is to embrace the tuma in the world, so to speak, it's to embrace the physical things and to make it pure, to make it tahar. Meaning we can't always just run away from bad things. We need to find those bad things and figure out how to live with them, right? Correct them, but we have to be able to deal with them and move forward. I think with this idea too, we'll just end. There's a famous, famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which, very interesting question I saw asked, which I never thought about. But the Mishnah says, Ezohi Hagibur, who is the strong person? Hakoveshes Yitzro. The person who takes charge of his Yitzhahara, overcomes his Yitzhahara. So, Ezohi Hagibur sounds like there's two options, right? There's two options, and the best one is the one who's Kovesh as Yitzro. So, what's the thing that the Mishnah doesn't tell us about? So again, the Sefer Shvili Pinchas talks about this idea, which will tie in beautifully as we close with Purim and Yom Kippur. When a Jew approaches his or her life and wants to figure out how we can improve our connection with Hashem, how we can grow, there's two ways we can do it. There's what he calls the dechias es atzmo, the pushing away of the bad, kind of just getting rid of it, putting aside. Right, and then there's someone who's kovish as Yitzro, someone who totally overcomes it. He gives the mashal of people who are being robbed. So one option is to get up and scream, and you'll scare people away. Right, they'll go away. The only problem is they might come back, right? As opposed to the people who are able to actually overcome those who come to rob them and get them locked up in jail so that they're never there to bother you. So he says that that's the same idea here as well. That Yom Kippur is one level of coming together with Hashem. We get rid of the bad. We know those things in our lives that, so to speak, are blatant and are bigger and that need to be gotten rid of or we need to move away from. Whereas Purim is the opportunity to not just do that, but to actually be kovish, as you so to take again through this love, because of what we talked about earlier, this Kabbalah HaTorah Me'ava Hashem, from understanding. And that's really the ability to get rid of those things from our lives, not just to put them away, but to totally overcome them and say, this is no longer a challenge for me. This is no longer something that is tempting to me. And that, I think, is the idea of what Purim represents. And if we think about it, although Purim represents many things, right, and there is definitely the Mishloach Manot and Matanot Avyonim and trying to bring love amongst each other, and we touched upon earlier why that is, right? I think what's most important and not always as well known, and that's why we're talking about it today, is that Purim has to end with each of us in our own way re-accepting the Torah, re-accepting our commitment to the mitzvot, because in actuality, that is really what the story of Purim was all about. That was the climax of the story, the end of the Megillah, and ultimately that's what makes Purim in a higher level to some extent than Yom Kippur. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful Purim.